Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest. Welcome back, my friend, Paul Moore.
Hey, Victor, it's such an honor to be here again.
Well, great to have you here. Now, Paul, you've been running several funds over the last several years. And in the past 12 months, you have pivoted into preferred equity, something we've actually talked about on the show recently. And so I'd love to dive into that. But before we do, for the folks who haven't met you, maybe spend a moment, give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Yeah, well, I sold my company in 97, and I thought that I'm a full-time investor. I wasn't. I was a full-time speculator. Right. And I lost a lot of money doing that. Now, I made a lot of money too, enough to keep me going. But I realized over the years the difference between investing and speculating. And you can make money at both, but investing, you generally don't have the chance of losing your whole investment. And so I, over the last many years, have been learning about investing. We have six funds at Wellings Capital. We invest in self-storage, mobile home parks, RV parks, multifamily, light industrial, and out open-air shopping centers. And we're having a barrel of fun over here. We're really looking for the very best operators we can find to partner with that do these projects, and we bring some or a lot of the equity.
I love it. Now, more recently, you've been talking about preferred equity, which some people consider it almost like mezzanine money, secondary financing. Yeah. It's more expensive capital. But because it starts with the letter E, it's got the word equity in the name, it gets right. Different treatment than, say, secondary financing might get, say, with a senior lender. But that's more of a nuance. That's more of a technicality. Let's talk a little bit about why this might be making more sense in the current environment.
Yeah. Well, if we have time, I'll get to why an operator would ever pay these high coupon rates for pref equity. But I can tell you for the investor and for us, of course, you know, there's such a benefit right now because it's generally lower risk. It's behind the debt in the capital stack and it's before the common equity. So here's how you can picture a capital stack. You've got, let's say, 60% debt first, with a lien on the property, and then you'd figure you'd have 40% equity. Sometimes folks aren't able to raise that much equity right now, or their LTV on the LTC on the debt might not be 75 where it used to be, it's down to 60. So they've got this gap in the middle, and that gap can, like you said, be filled by mezzanine debt, or it can be filled by preferred equity. So preferred equity has some of the pros and cons of debt and equity. Like debt, it has immediate cash flow, and that's a, you know, contractual cash flow. In the past, it was much lower, but now we're seeing cash flow in the 8, 9, 10, 11%, and even more for development or rescue deals, which we don't do. But it also has, like equity, future upside, and that could be a compounded upside of another 5 to 7%, making the total coupon right now, at least in the place we play, between $2 and $7 million checks, which is considered extremely small in the space. We're seeing coupons of 15 to 18%. Sometimes there's little kickers on top of that. It's got payment priority ahead of common equity. Obviously, typically a lower downside exposure because sometimes, like the deal we did recently, the entire principal and the upside is all prioritized ahead of the first dollar of common equity. So if something goes wrong and all the common equity is wiped out, it's likely that we'll still be intact. We also have forced sale rights. Management oversight rights. We can reserve the money. I mean, we typically reserve the first year of payments. So like on a $5 million deal at 10% annualized cash flow, the contractual cash flow, we might keep $500,000 the first year of payments back, which means we can get interest on that as well. Now, the reason this is compelling right now is because of this gap, like I mentioned, but also interest rates are so high that 15 to 18% coupon, while expensive, it actually works well for the operator as well. And with a 2 to 4 year time horizon, they can take us out and the GPs or LPs can get that equity for themselves, which is a benefit to them.
Now, you mentioned that you are not doing rescue deals. In my mind, preferred equity would be one of the ideal vehicles to implement a rescue with for the right deal, obviously not for any deal.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, sponsors, developers have done all the right things. They only miscalculated the rise in interest rates, and now they need to get out of a bridge without the means to do so because it involves writing a big check as opposed to getting a cash out refinance, which is what they were likely planning for when the interest rates started with a number 3, and they don't any longer today. What's the rationale? Or maybe your definition of rescue is a little different than mine.
No, I completely agree with you, Victor. We've identified 4 types of pref equity. There's probably more that we haven't thought of, but number 1 would be rescue capital, either buying a rate cap or, you know, paying for that extremely expensive insurance premium that doubled in Texas or Florida.
Sure.
Or, you know, maybe refilling debt service reserves or capital improvements to bring the net operating income up to a, you know, hopefully later refinance at a higher value. And rescue capital, again, I mentioned speculating versus investing. I don't think it's speculating, but I think it's leaning closer to that realm. And it's just something that Wellings Capital, my company, has just chosen not to do. We've also chosen not to do development. As much as we love development and know that that's where the big money is, it's just, we don't know what we don't know about development. So we haven't done that. Now, the 2 types we have and are actively doing are value add acquisitions and also recapitalizing an existing property. So the value add's obvious. Recapitalization might look like, you know, a $20 million property. Let's say there's $12 million in debt, $8 million in equity, and that lazy equity can be unlocked by, let's say, pref equity slug of, say, $4 million. We give them the $4 million. They give us personal guarantees in some cases. They give us, you know, those reserves. They give us management oversight approval rights. They give us for sale rights, etc. And then that $4 million they can take and go do some value add, or they can go buy another property, or they can do whatever they want with it, and then they can take us out in 2 years. So anyway, those are the 4 types we've identified.
Very interesting. Now, often a pref equity deal will have, like a loan, may have origination fees. Often the preferred equity will have termination fees or some termination bonus of some form. Talk a little bit about the way you like to structure things.
Yeah. And I want to be clear on this. Pref equity doesn't have as much upside as common. In fact, if the coupon is, let's say, 17% on the pref equity and the deal is coming in the 20%, 25% IRR, then that's very accretive to the common equity, and the GPs and all those guys are going to make much more money, and then they can buy us out as well in 2 to 4 years. But as far as those fees, yeah, we often see 1 to 2% origination fee, just like a lender, and we take that right up front. And then sometimes a 0.5% to 1.5% termination fee. The big fee actually is in the MOIC floor. So the multiple on invested capital. Let's just say, I probably shouldn't do the math on the fly like this, but let's just say it's a 15% coupon a year and it's a 3-year deal. Well, we expect a MOIC then of at least 1.45, 45% profit, 3 times 15. But if they take us out in 2 years, well, we're only going to get 1.30. Well, we have maybe a 1.40 floor. So they have to pay us, let's say, 8 more months to take us out early. So it's sort of like an early termination fee. And that's where we can get our IRR, our total coupon might be 15 plus the closing costs or the origination fee plus the termination fee and the MOIC floor. We could get up into the 20% range. Not as high as common equity could go, but certainly for the lower risk, quite compelling.
Yeah, absolutely. So the current environment, I mean, we are being approached literally daily with opportunities. And I've always believed that the marketplace is an all-you-can-eat buffet of opportunity. That's clear. There's always more than you could ever execute in a lifetime, which means that you have to be selective. Otherwise, you can get indigestion pretty quick. So how do you talk a little bit about your criteria? You mentioned some of the things you don't do. where do you set the bar to say, okay, this one is worth pursuing?
Well, that would take another show, I think. But fair enough. Victor, you know, it's so frustrating. As we've grown our due diligence and our investment team, we keep thinking, okay, now we'll be able to do much, you know, we'll be able to churn these deals much faster. But we keep thinking of things that could go wrong. You know, reading Warren and Charlie, you know, Warren Buffett, it just helps you think that way. So we've added things like NOI audits, which the operator, the borrower, if you will, pays for. That's like an $8,000 independent audit into the net operating income on the buy side. We do deep background checks, reference checks, death by Google. We go out and tour the property. We go to the operator's headquarters. We model out debt service coverage ratio globally and on the loan. And then on our deal, you know, we figure out what reserves need to be in place to protect us and our investors. There's so many things. A lot of it's gut feel. I mean, I'll tell you this. We've talked about a state you and I have both invested in. I probably shouldn't mention which one now that I think about it. But at any rate, we were way down the road, even wired the money to the closing attorney after 2 months of grueling due diligence. And they changed a term in the deal. They didn't completely overhaul the terms, but they tried to change a term at closing. And we said, that's it. We're out. And we pulled out. And that's the kind of thing we're willing to do. Warren Buffett said, the best investors say no a lot. The very best say no almost all the time. And we're trying to live by that.
Very interesting. So, I mean, you sound fairly risk averse, which makes sense. But at a certain point, if the terms of the money are too onerous and that sponsor, that developer, or that investor makes the decision to use that money, aren't they in fact adding risk by taking money that's too expensive? Why would they do it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So here's a quick run through of why I think operators are accepting this. Number one, they've got a gap in the capital stack, and this is the only way to get to the finish line, to get the deal closed. It's a short-term solution. We're not going to be there for the 12-year life of the deal. We might only be there two or three. And if you look at the blended average interest rate, let's say they're refinancing, or let's say they're assuming a loan. And they're assuming a 3.75% Fannie loan, which is a real example that we've done. Well, that's a lot cheaper than going out and getting new debt at, I don't know where it would be, let's say 5.5%, 6%, 7%. If they take just a sliver, let's say 15% at this higher rate, let's say we're at 17% coupon, the blended rate is still better than it would be getting a brand new loan. That's a big deal right there. They have to have confidence in the value add potential of the deal, confidence in their team to execute it, to get that NOI up so they can refinance and take us out. They might have another deal they know is going to close in a year and a half and give them $10 million where they can take us out and maybe even take some of the debt down. There's all kinds of reasons that they might want to do this. But think about this. If they know confidently that this deal is going to perform better than the coupon that we have, it's going to be accretive to the common equity and therefore the GP investors, because, you know, they're going to actually be in at, let's say, 25%. It's going to be 25% common equity rather than 45, let's say. And so those 25 are going to get a much, much bigger leverage profit by adding us in temporarily. We have one deal where the operator actually didn't even have common equity. He had debt and GP equity. The guy had $300 million in net worth, but he was tight on cash. So he actually signed a personal guarantee with us, and he basically took us on rather than common equity investors because he knew he could take us out in a fairly short time. So those are some reasons an operator would, you know, in some cases be willing to have these onerous terms and this onerous coupon rate.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, certainly in the case of a loan assumption where you've got a senior loan that is got amazing terms, like you said, the blended rate is going to be still very favorable. It's going to be cheaper than going out and getting new money. It's less obvious of how you would layer this on top of a brand new senior origination. Then the blended rate starts to look pretty high.
It really is high, but I tell you what, if they, let's say they have an incredible value add opportunity, like, I mean, where they can, you know, add what, $5,000 a unit and then increase rents by $300. And they've gotten that proven already. And they've done it before. And they've been in this market. And they think interest rates, and that, now this is where it gets into gambling a little. They think interest rates in 2 years will be much less and they can refinance, you know, at a lower rate. That's where they could actually consider doing this and, you know, making it work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Paul, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
They can get hold of us. I'm on Twitter at Paul Moore Invest, and our website is wellingscapital.com. If they'd like some free resources, it's wellingscapital.com/resources.
Fantastic. Well, great to catch up, my friend. And for the listeners at home, definitely reach out to Paul Moore at Wellings Capital, wellingscapital.com. The link will be in the show notes. In the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.